Welcome to Tea, Toast, and Theology.
So, this week on one of the diocesan clergy forums, one of the people who works for the diocese, commending a book. And the book was about the dishonest manager. And he said, friends, this is a great resource for stewardship time. And today I am not preaching about stewardship. So I know there's a big relief here. Honest money and okay. My focus today is that question that we heard in Jeremiah. The question was, is there a balm in Gilead? Is there a balm in Gilead? Which essentially means, is there any source of healing, comfort, peace around? Because if you go back to that reading, it speaks about that pain, that anxiety, that real suffering that is all around. So the question is, in the midst of all the suffering, is there a balm in Gilead? About 3 weeks ago, I think it was, one of my cousins started his time. He is a priest, and he started his time in a seminary down in Texas. So, you know, the first week coming all the way from Pakistan was, wow, you know, everything is different. You're looking at it and going, whoa, okay, that's all right. And he has kids and he has a wife, and they are not with him, so he's here by himself. And he found himself a roommate, also a student at the seminary, who's doing PhD, I believe. I think he is a Chinese student, and so he is learning how to be a roommate, also he's. Very appreciative of this person because, believe it or not, says he's a really nice guy. I said, really, how? He says, he even cooks for me. I said, well, that's really nice. So he's getting used to all this. And then this week, I was on the phone with him for quite some time. And my wife said, so what's going on? What's happening? And I said, he is now beginning to enter into the deeper cultural shock. And my wife said, well, you know, it's really a huge blessing to him that you have gone through all this and you kind of understand how it works, so you can walk him through it. And I said, yeah, you know, in some ways he has his own life that he will be going through. But yes. And so she said, what is the cultural shock? And I said, the cultural shock is that he says that I come home and my roommate is a very nice guy. But my roommate comes home and he goes straight to his room to study. And I said, that's really good. That's what you should be doing too. That's why you are here. And he said, well, I mean, yeah, studies are fine, but what about life? There is more to life. Now, I understood what he was talking about. Because the culture he and I come from, when we were kids, starting from like 4 o'clock onwards, when we were really little kids, till about 6 o'clock, But as we grew older, the time limit became, you know, further out, adults maybe even till midnight. What would happen practically every day is you would hang out with friends every day. And it would not be scheduled or anything like that. You just show up at your friend's place, knock on the door, and you just hang out. And sometimes you go from one friend to the next, and the next, and you're just hanging out as friends. And when I told my wife that, she said, well, you know, before two people in the household started working and things became so scheduled, that used to happen in this country too, right? And then she said, every day? And I said, yep, every day. That's what we do. Every day you just hang out with friends. You share about everything with your friends, and they are there for you. And what my wife really at first used to not understand is that when we are on the phone, like I have a few friends, and now some of them are in Canada, so we are on the phone. And when we talk to each other, it's mostly teasing each other. And we get really rough with teasing each other. And we all laugh. And she doesn't understand how is it that they call you again, right? that they are not offended by it. I said, well, that's how the culture works. We are so good friends that we just are very, very honest with each other. And that is expected. If you're not honest with each other, that's not a mark of a good friendship, right? Mark of a good friendship is that you can actually be completely open with each other. And so I said, that would happen. And now this poor guy is here and he does not have his family. He does not have his children with him. And he is in this foreign culture, just starting out. And the culture here isn't exactly about that. This last Friday, Molly and I spontaneously decided to go to the mall. I wanted to look at something in a, well, tech store. So, surprise. So, I wanted to touch it and feel it and see it, how it was. I wanted to see the weight of that device and so on and so forth, not just what the specs were, right? And so, so I went to the mall. We both went to the mall. And as we came close to Trumbull Mall, I said, Molly, what's wrong? There's something wrong here. It was Friday night. And that whole parking lot near Macy's was empty. There was no car there. We were the only ones in that parking lot. And we looked around and the other parking lots were not really occupied that much either. Friday night, around 8:30 or so. And we went in. And we walked through the entire Macy's. We went down to where the tech store was. And there was hardly anyone in the mall. And on the way out, I said to Molly, malls were not about just shopping. Malls used to be places where people just hung out, right? Teenagers just hung out. They would just go from, you know, up and down stores, and sometimes they would then get hungry, and then they would go down to the food court. Families would be sitting next to the family areas and play areas while, you know, people were shopping, and children would play, and parents would interact with each other, and maybe they would make friendships there. Relationships would begin. But there was so much that happened in a mall. It wasn't just about shopping. And it was also about the experience of what I wanted to do, feeling, touching and feeling, seeing how this whole thing weighed or, you know, felt, your clothing felt on you or, you know, all of that. Now, this is coming from a person who does like to shop online. And most of the things I do, I shop online. And my wife said to me, she's a teacher, so she was getting ready for her school year and she needed some school supplies for her class. And she said she looked around and she went to different places and she couldn't find the things she wanted. And it was a very simple thing and she had to order it online because there were no school supplies for teachers place anymore that she could go to. Now, what has that got to do with the readings for today? You see, this dishonest manager made a choice and prioritized relationships. He decided that it is best for him to maybe give up the percentage that he would get, because one of the theories is that in those times, if someone owed 100, let's say, tax collectors did the same thing. So if 100 was owed, the collection agency, if you will, could basically charge whatever they could squeeze out of that person. So 110, 150, 200, whatever they could squeeze, they would, right? And so whatever they did get on top of what was owed used to go to the collection person, which is this guy. And so one theory is that what he is really doing is he is letting his share go. What he would get from the deal, he's letting it go. Well, I don't know if that's true or not. But the point is that he is giving priority to relationships. He's making a conscious decision that relationships are more important than money. Relationships are more important than wealth. Now, I'll be honest with you. I have deep concern for our society today. Because if it means empty malls, right, and all the places where we could just hang out and talk to people, and on the other hand, I have heard from people, multiple numbers of people, that there aren't enough counselors available. People need someone to talk to, and they are not available. Because we have isolated ourselves while giving priority well. So while I didn't want to go there with my cousin, I just told him, you are here to study, you do likewise. You study, you do exactly what your roommate is doing. But the fact is, my friends, our society needs a renewal in the way we do relationships. At St. Paul's, I can say now, many years ago, kind of feels good to say that, we started this whole thing about discipleship. And what is discipleship program? Discipleship program was, yes, about prayers. It was, yes, about having a daily devotion with the scriptures. The most important component of that program was building one-on-one relationships. One-on-one relationships. I remember, I shared this with this church before, Dane Olfin once asked me, what is your vision for your church? And I was giving him smart aleck answers, you know, a lot of words. And he would say, okay, he would listen to me very carefully. And then he would say, and what is your vision for the church? And that was enough to say, he doesn't think I have a vision for the church right now, right? And we went through this exercise over months. And, he really pushed me to think this thing through. And ultimately, one day, I said, I know what the vision for the church is. And he said, what is it? And I said, my vision for the church is that when people leave a worship service, we should see people praying for each other in the parking lot. That is my vision for the church. So everything that we need to do to get to that point where after the worship service, we should be able to see people praying for each other in the parking lot. And he said, all right, now you have a vision. How are we going to move towards it? Right? Now, you see, there is a terminology in churches that we use. And it's not always with the most positive connotation. And that terminology is parking lot conversations. You know what parking lot conversations end up being? They end up being two people talking and expressing whatever is bothering them. But the subject of that conversation is usually a third person who's being beat up upon. That's what usually a parking lot conversation is. Now, you see the difference between that vision and seeing people praying for each other? Because the main difference between those two things is that, here's the thing, we all want to talk to each other and relate to each other. We want to do that. That's a human thing. We are gregarious beings. We want to be in relationship. But you see why parking lot conversations don't end up that vision of praying for each other? There is one simple component to that, which is that it is really, really difficult to reach that point of confidence where we feel it's okay to be vulnerable with another person. Because when we are feeling confident that it's okay to be vulnerable, we are willing to share what we are going through and what our hurt is. And when we are willing to share with each other what our hurt is, we can actually pray with each other and be a Christ-like presence for each other. So my friends, that vision is still there. And we have been inching towards that vision, slowly but surely. You know, the easiest thing to do is to get together and talk. And it's kind of very interesting. Usually these things happen right after we have done the beautiful worship service, or right after people have had this wonderful Bible study, right after this wonderful small group, and somehow doesn't take too long, and there you go. Someone else is the subject of that conversation because we find it so difficult to share what is really actually hurting us, because vulnerability is extremely hard to carry. My friends, Christ invites us to building relationships. This morning, after the worship service, we'll be going and blessing the game room. What's the point of game room? This Saturday, when we were rehearsing at our community choir, which, by the way, you know why the community choir works? The community choir is made up of all the different kinds of people from different churches, and they come here and they sing. Now, ask yourself this question. Are they really singing so that St. Paul's worship service is going to sound very nice? No, they're not doing it for that, are they? They're doing it because it is fun to sing together. Because there is something about our human nature that wants us to be with other people, to hang out with other people. And I can tell you that community choir is a lot of fun. They have a lot of fun together singing. And they're singing and they are recording. And sometimes I would play it back to them and they would say, oh, okay, we sang that. All right. You know, Charlie's comment. One day I even recorded Charlie's comment, right? You still heard that, right? So because it's a feeling, it's a great feeling, right? Am I right, Charlie? It's a great feeling to be with other people, to be with other people and to sing together. That is investing in relationships. So when we were here, somehow we were talking about the game room, and Amanda said, well, you know, we had that air hockey thing at our home for years. And my children didn't play. We brought it to church, and now all of a sudden they are so interested in playing with it. Right? Why is that? Because there is a possibility here to play with someone else that they don't live with. Right? Today, and we will see in the game room, it's not only for children. So if people are thinking it's only for children, you know, air hockey and Wii and all that, no, it's not only for children. There are also puzzles. We have multiple puzzles here that were also, like everything else, was so generously donated. 500 pieces puzzles. So you can take your time, sit there, enjoy making that puzzle and have conversations, maybe with the kids who are there, maybe with each other. What is the idea? The idea is that in a society where everything is structured around relationships, where we make appointments to meet friends now, where sports is all organized and structured, we need to create spaces where people can learn how to do relationships on their own. So here's where I close. St. Paul's offers you small groups. Next week, our small groups are up. If you have not yet, consider being in one of the small groups. The idea behind all of those things, small groups, Bible study, is to work towards that vision where there is confidence in our people to not use gatherings to beat up someone else, but to use gatherings to be there for each other. And how do we do that? When we can do that only when we have confidence that we can all be vulnerable. Now here's, I love the laughter that's coming. That's just God saying to us, that's what our community is about. We need to create that community, and we are doing it step by step. Fellowship space, game room, prayer room, all of them are tailored towards that vision. That vision of being in deep Christ-like relationships with each other. So the answer to your to that question, is there a balm in Gilead? Is there a balm in Gilead? My friends, yes, the answer is there is a balm in Gilead that soothes my hurting soul. And that balm in Gilead is all of us. It's all of us. We can all be there for each other in Christ-like ways. We can all be there for each other to pray for each other, to hold each other and support, to listen to each other when we hurt. That, my friends, is the balm in Gilead. That is what that dishonest manager was investing in. And that is why Christ commends it to us. Not the dishonesty, but to prioritize relationships over